Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast now in our 16th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with Sequoia Simmermeyer, the chairman of the National Indian Gaming Commission, about how the agency navigated the pandemic and how it's helping tribal casinos to reopen successfully. This week's program is sponsored by Konami Gaming, whose Ocean Spin slot ranked the number one top-performing new premium video title according to Real Metrics Red Hot Index. For a regulatory body, the National Indian Gaming Commission had several important challenges during the pandemic. Chairman Sequoia Simmermeyer says his agency used the pandemic to focus on streamlining processes and procedures to better serve the tribes and operations depending upon them. Now that the commission has its full component of three members for the first time in several years, Simmermeyer is enthusiastic that his agency will exceed expectations in its primary function, the integrity of the industry. He spoke with me on Zoom from his offices in Washington, D.C. in May. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Our guest is the chairman of the National Indian Gaming Commission, Sequoia Simmermeyer. Chairman, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Roger. It's great to be joining you.
Absolutely. It's good to see you. I think, what you've been doing as you've been chairman of the NIGC has been really interesting. But you did have a lot of challenges. I mean, really, right when you came on a few months afterwards, the pandemic hit. So explain what kind of challenges you had, to the operation of the NIGC.
Sure. Thanks. Well, one thing we did pretty soon after starting on and having to deal with the pandemic and its impact both on our operations and on how we meet our mission is we really divided our focus into projects that were internal and external. And because of that, I think we've been able to be somewhat innovative in how we're meeting our responsibilities, but we still have some challenges and we plan to keep addressing those by both continuing to support the staff at NIGC who've been working really hard to make the most of these circumstances, but also really remain dedicated to our partnership with tribal communities, and in particular focusing on our shared interest in protecting tribal assets. So in our internal project work that we've done, we've worked hard at maintaining our operations during the protocol, during the pandemic. And a lot of that has been working for over a year now under a maximum telework. So we've really prioritized operational work that addresses issues early on so that they don't become unmanageable problems. We've really focused on prioritizing policies and practices that are transparent and consistent. We've also early on tried to anticipate uncertainty from the impact of the pandemic. And we've done that by putting cost-saving restrictions in place on our operations. And we've done that also by trying to involve tribes in our planning processes. So those are some of the ways that we've approached things with our internal projects and some of the external work that we've done. We've really, really hard and focused a lot on communication, both across our agency and especially at the local level with our region offices. We have 8 region offices in the field. And we worked with our partners with intertribal organizations to try to tailor our support around local issues in Indian country for tribes as they were doing their decision-making around the pandemic. A lot of that local level outreach helped us to be able to assess public health measures that tribes were putting in place. And it also helped us to participate where it was appropriate in some of the decision-making processes that tribes were undertaking.
Sure.
But those partnerships were also really important as we were able to work with public health experts at the federal level. We wanted to make sure that our policies and resources were providing both sound guidance and gave a framework for local decision-making with tribes. So that resulted in about 50 different resources and training events that are all available on our website and that are tailored to the Indian gaming industry. And so some of those resources were focused on operational and tribal government decision-making issues, an environment, public health, and safety checklist, a model infectious disease plan that we developed, a primer on cybersecurity response measures that was necessary during this time, We have a really robust frequently asked questions document that's always being updated. And so we're working to help to tie that update and guidance to our regulations and assist tribes at the various points in their decision making. So,
okay, great.
So it's been a challenge, but I think we're and there's still some work that we can do, but we're dedicated to keeping moving forward.
Sure. Well, I believe even before the pandemic hit, you were starting to transition a lot of your training programs and things like that online, and certainly you continued that, with an even greater extent when the pandemic hit. Tell me how technology assisted staying in touch with the tribes during this period.
Sure. Well, we had last year dedicated all of our technical assistance, which is part of our statutory requirement for the agency, was dedicated to being virtual. Obviously, we typically will hold in-person region training conferences, and we moved all of that to a virtual platform. And we've had a good amount of success at reaching a broad audience with that. I think we've also been able to be pretty responsive to some of the needs as they were coming up. We've used those same, during last year, we had to make adjustments and upgrade some of our virtual formats so that we could use it not just for our technical assistance that we provided through our trainings, but also in keeping communication through region-focused meetings with tribes and through commission outreach with tribes at the commission level. Mm-hmm. We also have used technology in some of our day-to-day work by focusing on the capacity for our remote site visits. So where we had a focus in the past year on audits for criminal history record information practices that tribes have and their licensing programs, technology has been a really important way that we've been able to maintain that responsibility, as well as other site-specific type training. And also the investment that the agency's made over the years in technology and building up our technology team's capacity has really been, has served us well during the last year, both in making our operations more efficient, but also having a source of a knowledge to help tribes as they're navigating issues that impact technology in their operations.
Okay. So how did you oversee the closing of casinos in Indian Country? I know I've spoken to regulators in Nevada, New Jersey, and they gave their casinos 18 hours basically to close. Did you actually give them the deadline, or did they tell you we're going to close? And what was your role when that happened?
Sure. Well, the Indian Regulatory Act sets up a little bit different framework for how we approach an issue like this. It definitely was a closure that we had never seen before in the industry. And a Northwest tribe was one of the first ones to make that decision. Mm-hmm. And tribal decision makers, tribal lawmakers were, leading that decision making process. Right. And so they were doing it based on circumstances at the local level that were put in place to, protect employees and make sure that customers were safe. And so a lot of it was driven by local conditions. Every tribal government, soon after had to deal with that decision-making process. It was important early on for the NIGC to help support that decision-making process by monitoring and assisting tribal decision-makers. We also emphasized the expectation that the tribal gaming regulatory authorities under our regulations and under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act are part of that decision-making process and really encourage coordination with local jurisdictions in order to be able to make that assessment the tribes were making. But they're continuing to have to make those decisions now, even as they, continue to assess their capacity and make a decision to reopen or how to modify their operations. I think that for the commission, preparedness has always been important in the agency's mindset early on, even before, we knew about the pandemic. We were focused on preparedness and promoting that in the area of kind of workforce planning, natural disaster responses. A lot of the early meetings that I had as chairman focused on those topics and looking at the issues and challenges that tribes face with being able to assess their risk and look at how they eliminate that risk when it comes to environment, public health and safety matters. So that was, I think, one thing where the agency was looking in that direction. In the past, the agency, it hasn't taken up the issue of environment, public health and safety in a really broad way. I think most recently, Chairwoman Tracy Stevens looked at how the regulations assigned responsibility for ensuring environment, public health, and safety in an operation. And I think that was both a pragmatic and an appropriate approach considering the different regulatory bodies that are involved. And there was also early on in the 2000s, some analysis that the agency put out about what constitutes imminent jeopardy and how to manage those threats. But I think that one thing we tried to do early on was to articulate that from the commission's perspective, we want to know, has the Tribal Gaming Regulatory Authority attested to environment, public health, and safety standards? Are those standards being enforced? And are those standards sufficient to mitigate the immediate threat? And I think that was important for us to weigh in as tribal leaders were making their decisions.
Okay, great. So this is the first time in a while that you have a full complement of commissioners. There's always somebody out, but now you've got the three full commissioners, and they're all Native Americans. And is this the first time that they're all, I know there's always one or two of them, but is this the first time that all three commissioners are Native Americans?
I think in the past there's been three Native commissioners serving at the same time.
Okay.
I think, all three members of the current commission were really all proud to be Native. And proud to be serving on the commission. Mm-hmm. I'm a member of the Coharie tribe. We're a state recognized tribe from North Carolina.
Right.
My family's also got strong roots in northern New Mexico and grew up active in my community and an urban Indian community as well. So I think that shapes my identity. But I know the vice chair, Isom Claus, and Commissioner Hovland, they come from tribal communities and are active in their communities, and they bring their own perspectives from Indian country that kind of helped to inform our decision making. But having a full complement on the commission, I think, is what the Indian Game Regulatory Act contemplated. We can operate with a two members as a quorum and with an appointed chairman. But I think that both the vice chair and I, we've both said that we're excited to have Commissioner Hovland join us on. And it helps to have a broader deliberative process and really improves the work at the agency.
Sure.
We're very excited to have a full commission.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Earlier this month on the GGB podcast, I mentioned Konami's highly popular All Aboard game, which was first released on its Dimension 49J premium cabinet. Ocean Spin is the next release on this machine. Initial installs for Ocean Spin are indexing as high as 5x house average, even higher starting performance than All Aboard. Players are going to want to see this game on the casino floor. One more reason to reach out to the folks at Konami and secure a spot for this new premium slot. Now back to our podcast. So how has the change in administration affected the NIGC?
Not directly, and I think that's what the Indian Game Regulatory Act envisioned. Mm-hmm. IGRA established that the NIGC commissioners serve on set 3-year terms regardless of an administration change.
Right.
They consider under the law, requirements for a bipartisan makeup. Mm-hmm. And I think that diversity is really important to how the commission's operated in the past and will continue to operate in the future. So I think that we've established a relationship with a lot of other agencies, and that carries on, through the administrations and with a really strong staff.
Sure. Absolutely. So we now have the first Native American Secretary of the Interior. So there's kind of a trend going on here with Native Americans, and certainly members of her staff are Native Americans as well. Have you had conversations with the secretary or her staff about how the relationship between your two agencies will behave?
Yeah, well, our NIGC and DOI, we've had a really good working relationship, and that continues on. I think one good example of that's with our Office of General Counsel and our Solicitor's Office at Interior. They frequently collaborate on issues.
Sure.
We also have relationships with on the operations side of the agency. Recently we're working as we're kind of modernizing our IT infrastructure and collaborating with Interior, and that's been really, I think, beneficial to the NIGC. Early on, all the members of the commission, we issued a statement expressing our congratulations to Secretary Hammond. And I think, as Native people, we share in the excitement of having a Native American secretary, such an important role.
Right.
I look forward to her bringing attention across the Interior to important issues. And, and Indian Country's relevance and on national issues too. So it's an exciting time.
Sure. And of course, the NIGC is a quasi-independent agency, so they don't really oversee you. But there are issues such as the land into trust issues, when there's gaming possibilities, where you need to collaborate. And in the past, sometimes that's been a little rocky. Under your term, has it been very, very collaborative?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the NIGC, we don't have a role in decision-making about bringing land into trust.
Right.
That work's done under the Interior and with the Secretary's authority. If it's already in trust, however, and a tribe decides it wants to game on that land, then, we review the land status to ensure lands are eligible for gaming under the Indian Game Regulatory Act. Mm-hmm. And for that, solid collaborative working relationship can be helpful in making sure we're kind of consistent across the board in interpreting that status.
Okay. So I know that NIGC collaborates, very much with some other departments, especially the Department of Justice. I know some of your previous commissioners have had law enforcement backgrounds. What other agencies in the federal government do you collaborate with, or is there just a lot of them?
Sure. Well, I think that we have a statutory duty to refer matters to justice, mm-hmm. but other types of agencies, it's valuable for us as a regulatory body to borrow on their expertise and to integrate that into our training. It strengthens the industry overall and the regulatory framework and the role that we play, whether it's with the Department of Homeland Security. I think other members of the commission, myself included, have been very supportive of work to highlight the opportunity in the industry and among the regulatory community to improve awareness about and promote best practices around human trafficking. So they've been a good partner in that. Other groups with the, have a shared interest, whether it's through IRS and Treasury or mm-hmm. with FinCEN and Bank Secrecy Act implementation.
Sure.
There's opportunities there for collaboration, and I think that's always important to keep promoting that collaboration.
Sure. And, this kind of highlights all the different responsibilities that the NIGA has: enforcement, training, finance, regulations. How are those responsibilities divided up amongst the staff there?
Sure. Well, we generally, we're an agency where there's two main branches, a branch managed by the general counsel and a branch managed by the chief of staff.
Mm-hmm.
The chief of staff has divisions within it that deal with finance, compliance matters, with a technology focus, and some of our external outreach that goes on. One of the things we've done in the past year is to elevate and to establish, or in some cases reestablish, chief executive officers over those different divisions within the office, and have kind of direct communication with the commission. And that's been important to ensuring that we have the right type of depth of understanding on technical issues, that we're keeping up to date, that we are developing policies that kind of cut across the different divisions of the agency, and making sure that we have that we're looking down the road at what new topics we might need to be addressing. But our staff on that chief executive level are also supported a lot by staff in the regions. As I mentioned, we have 8 region offices. And particularly during the pandemic, our region offices have been really important to maintaining communication, but they're always in on-the-ground contact for making sure that we're innovative in our collaboration and outreach with gaming regulatory partners. And a lot of our staff, who are predominantly in D.C., but everyone works across the agency,
mm-hmm.
to meet our mission.
Okay, great. So one of your predecessors, pledged to draw a bright line between Class 2 and Class 3 gaming. Is there such a bright line today?
I think that the bigger question regarding factors that would determine game classification, mm-hmm. they've mostly been dealt with through game classification decisions, advisory opinions,
right.
that are with the general counsel's office,
mm-hmm.
been litigation on that, and there's relatively robust administrative resources that are available to look at that issue, which generally can be pretty fact specific.
Right.
But IGRA and NIGC regulations define Class 2 and Class 3 gaming, and we've been able to work within that framework to make classification decisions based on the elements of the game as they are in front of us, based on the facts of that specific game.
Sure. Well, you mentioned that there was some judicial action there. Was that the Colorado River Indian Tribes suit that that you know, sought to separate those?
Well, that definitely, you know, it identified the role under the Indian Game Regulatory Act right. for FGC and in its class three. Right. One of the things that the commission did in recent years was to move those class three minimum internal controls from our regulations at part 542 to make those guidance to make sure clear that interpretation of the Colorado River Indian Tribes decision.
Okay, great. So sports betting is obviously the big issue in the overall gaming industry these days, and it's really started to come to tribal gaming, certainly in the state of Michigan, where they've the tribes have the ability to offer sports betting as well. What is the NRGC role in overseeing that?
Well, generally with sports betting, one thing that did early on that I was worked with the staff to do was to put out a guidance on sports betting and what some of the considerations were for the NIGC as tribes were contemplating this. And really, as tribes contemplated, if that's an option that they wanted to pursue, if they contemplated and looked at whether or not they were able to under their restrictions through a compact or as on class three gaming, you know, we tried to make clear that our interest was in looking at the management contract approval requirements that are laid out in IGRA and the whether or not arrangements that were being made had implications for the sole proprietary interest requirement that's in IGRA. But the approach that guidance provides is it lays out, as we were seeing it, the different options that tribes were pursuing. And so we tried to help put that information out so that tribes and their partners can consider what role the NIGC might play in there, but it really does depend a lot on how they're structuring that relationship and how they're providing it. And there's kind of four different models that we saw that were laid out in that guidance. I think the most common approach that we've seen is that an operation, a tribally licensed operation will hire a vendor or consultant that provides discrete information or advice to the tribe,
right.
Allows them to, for example, hire someone to provide advice on setting the line for the wager or to whether or not they should accept the wager. So those are some of the considerations that go into whether or not management is occurring or whether or not there's a sole proprietary interest, which are the concerns under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act.
Okay. So I think this is probably more of an interior discussion, but the Seminole Tribe recently signed a deal with the state of Florida where it gives them control of sports betting, but they can outsource it to non-tribal lands and non-tribal entities, for a cut of the revenue. And I think it's 60% that they give to the outside sources. And that seems to go against regulation that requires a tribe to not really pay any taxes to the states. Is that correct? Am I reading that wrong?
Well, I think it's definitely a question for Interior in terms right. of how their role on interpreting the compact. And I'm not sure about that revenue sharing percentage. I haven't seen that right. yet. I think NIGC yet, but that's definitely something that, DOI has to consider under its regulations as it kind of reviews a tribal gaming compact.
Sure, sure. And, we've seen every state really enter the sports betting industry a different way, different tax rates, things of that nature. So are you going to have to really consider each state or each tribe when they get into the sports betting business and how their deal is structured?
For the compacting provisions for it, that's really a question for how Interior interprets their role.
Right.
But we're looking in trying to lay out a framework for what we consider under sports betting. It just depends on kind of how they're structuring it, and it's very fact specific in that area.
Okay. So the same question, I guess, for online gaming. In Michigan, the tribes have the ability to offer online gaming as well as sports betting. What role does the NRGs have in that perspective there?
Yeah, and again, that's a little bit similar. It depends on how the gaming is being conducted. Essentially, NIGC, we have the authority, that's granted to us under the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act over gaming activity that occurs on Indian lands.
Right.
So, for class three, that includes, our internal control standards and our regulations, You know, for class three activity, which sports betting would come mm-hmm. under, you know, our role is more limited, but we still have authority over gaming activity that's occurring on Indian land itself. Right.
Well, a lot of the speculation, if the tribes are allowed to do online gaming, is that the servers will be on Indian land. So, you know, essentially the bets are being taken on Indian land. So would that fall under your purview, do you believe?
Well, I think for any gaming that's occurring on Indian land, then, you know, we have a role there. It depends on, again, the facts that are specific to that game. You know, and that's by the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act's design in terms of, you know, it does not speak to either, you know, prohibiting or permitting gaming off of Indian land, but with regard to Indian land activity, it's the, you know, expectation, it's been the position in the past that's the expectation that that will all fall within the regulatory framework of IGRA.
Okay, great. So we have a lot of tribes now getting involved in commercial gaming. I mean, that's been happening for years, but just recently ramped up here in Las Vegas. The San Manuel tribe just bought one of the major resorts, the Palms, and they'll be operating commercial gaming out here. I understand that's not on Indian land and you don't have any regular oversight over that, but do you have to review these deals that they make with these off Indian land casinos?
You know, our role, you know, with the mentioning we just talked about with IGRA, it's with regards to Indian lands. You know, we've seen, however, a really strong growth with tribes who are, you know, managing and providing services to other tribes.
Sure, right.
For IGRA gaming operations. And that's not surprising. You know, tribes are developing strong expertise. Mm-hmm. They're running and regulating casinos, and it makes sense that they look for other opportunities to do that. In the case of where we're seeing more where tribes are managing other tribes' operations, you know, we treat the tribe providing those services as we would like any other vendor.
Sure.
There are certain concessions that a tribal manager might have, though. You know, for example, if a tribe is proposing to manage and will be seeking a management contract approval for mm-hmm. that, you know, we can look at a reduced scope of a background investigation if that's what the tribe desires.
Sure.
But that would kind of be our role in that area.
Okay, great. So the primary goal of the NIGC is to protect the integrity of Indian gaming and protect the tribal resources. How well do you think the NIGC has performed that over the years, and how do you emphasize that under your administration?
Sure. Well, the industry has grown both in its kind of geographic footprint and the size of the revenue generates. You know, today there's, you know, about 525 operations that are licensed by about 250 tribes on Indian land in 29 different states. So it's grown from a hundreds of millions of dollars annual industry to a tens of billions of dollars industry. And it's also a very diverse cross section. You have, you know, really different relationships with the local jurisdictions. You have different economic impacts at the regional level. You know, collectively they have a significant impact on the national economy, but for tribal communities, Indian gaming means different things in those communities. It can be an important source of revenue for the tribe to make sure that tribal gaming operations are supporting important services for communities. So I think over the last 30 years, the commission's remained aware of that diversity and that ongoing evolution in the industry. And I think that, you know, by and large, the commissions have always done their best when they keep that in mind. That they've served the interests of the industry at that time and been able to meet their mission as laid out under IGRA. You know, since joining as chairman, it's always been a focus of mine to emphasize work that the industry does around kind of four areas. One is industry integrity, preparedness, outreach, and agency accountability. You know, ensuring the integrity is really important to protecting the tool that Indian gaming provides for tribal communities. Preparedness, as we've talked about, is not just as we've been dealing with in the pandemic, but it's looking at other issues of tribes' capacity to mitigate risk and to assess risk and to look at workforce development issues in rurally located communities especially, and also to deal with natural disaster responses and coordination with local jurisdictions. Our outreach is important as emphasis area for us because it helps us not only to be innovative in the way that we're developing policy, but it's really important to maintaining a responsible interpretation of the government-to-government relationship with tribes, you know, through consultation. And in the area of agency accountability, it's really important, I think, for the agency always to meet the public's expectation for administrative processes that are defensible, that promote good governance, that make us an efficient operation, and that really keep at our core protecting tribal assets is our mission.
Great, great. Well, Chairman, I think you've done a great job in your short time as chairman, and you've got some challenges ahead of you, but I'm confident that you'll continue to do a good job. So thanks for the time. I really appreciate it, and we hope to do this again next time in person.
Absolutely, Roger. Looking forward to that.
Okay, thank you. Enjoyed this week's podcast brought to you by Konami Gaming. Visit konamigaming.com/premiums for more about Ocean Spin and Dimension 49J. To learn more about the NIGC and how it oversees tribal gaming, visit ggbmagazine.com. To read a column by Chairman Simmermeyer in the annual Tribal Government Gaming magazine, visit tribalgovernmentgaming.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the recovery from the pandemic, including daily updates, subscribe for free at ggbnews.com by using the code GGB180. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.